Hello, this is Deepak Bhatt for ACC.org and this week's Eagle's Eye podcast. I'm stepping in for Dr. Kim Eagle this week because he is away on vacation. Lucky Dr. Eagle. I'm not sure where he is, but I'm sure it's some fun place. He actually tweeted out a picture that seemed like a really nice locale wherever he is. Anyway, I've got three different articles I'm going to cover, each of which is covered in a journal scan on ACC.org, and they're all related to COVID, because that's pretty much all anyone's talking about these days in the world of cardiology. If you do go out, COVID's what everyone's talking about, and these three studies cover aspects of COVID that I think are important for those of us in the cardiovascular space to know about. Let me start off with a study that came out in Annals of Internal Medicine. This was a study that used the Kaiser Permanente database and examined people in that database as a function of their body mass index, specifically folks who were COVID-19 diagnosed. What they found was that morbid obesity was associated with an increased risk of death, and that risk was most notable in men and in patients less than or equal to 60 years of age. Of course, prior reports have already shown that obesity increases the risk in a variety of different disease states, COVID-19 included. What was particularly interesting, though, about this analysis is that the relationship between obesity and death from COVID-19 wasn't clearly related to comorbid risk factors, as you might have expected, or to other confounders, at least the ones that they were able to measure. And potentially raises the possibility that something about obesity is pro-inflammatory and maybe pro-thrombotic, and somehow or the other that is interplaying with COVID-19 related illnesses in a way that is pretty bad. Of course, that's just a hypothesis. There's a lot of COVID-19 research going on trying to sort out the mechanisms of disease, but it does seem like obesity is a bad player. The next article I'm going to mention is one that is in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology from China, examining a nationwide study of ST segment elevation myocardial infarction treatment patterns and also prognosis. And the lessons, which I think are generalizable to all healthcare systems around the world from what we're hearing and seeing, is that there were reductions in STEMI patients' access to care, delays in treatment, changes in reperfusion strategy, and associated increases in in-hospital mortality and heart failure. So these are all concerning findings, obviously, but I think are in keeping with other reports that have also come out and are emerging. I think this is just a byproduct, another byproduct of the COVID-19 pandemic, in this case specific to cardiovascular care. You know, parenthetically, I might point out that I think at least in some situations where there's been a shift from primary PCI back to lytics, that's probably not the best thing to do. Obviously, if a healthcare system is totally overwhelmed, you've got to do what you've got to do. But I think as a default strategy, that's probably not a great idea, especially with COVID, where there are a lot of STEMI mimics, and may not be the best thing to just go ahead and lyse where delineating the anatomy perhaps non-invasively with a CT angio, or of course invasively with a coronary angiogram, makes the diagnosis expeditiously, avoids unnecessary, potentially risky therapies like lytics, and if there is indeed a significant epicardial lesion, allows immediate treatment with primary PCI. But at any rate, it's a tough topic, and it's hard to know what the right thing to do is, especially in the throes of a pandemic. The final study I'll mention is another article from Annals of Internal Medicine, and this one examined different risks for transmission in close contacts of patients with COVID-19 from China. I think it's a really valuable paper. It shows that more severe cases and those with a productive cough were the ones more likely to spread infection to others. That makes sense. That's in keeping with what we know about a variety of different infectious diseases, so that's useful information. It also found that SARS-CoV-2 transmission is more likely in household contacts compared with healthcare or public transportation settings. So that part about it being more likely to spread in a household than in a healthcare setting, I think should be reassuring to our patients, many of whom I believe have been scared to come into the hospital even though they need to, including folks with STEMIs and strokes and really bad stuff like that. So I think it's useful information to further reassure patients that if they need to come into the hospital, if there's a good reason to come in, that if they're sick or they don't know what's going on, or even if they've just got sort of quote-unquote routine care that needs to be delivered in person, things like colonoscopies or vaccination, the flu shot, for example, coming up soon, that those things shouldn't be avoided because of fear of catching COVID in the hospital. That risk seems to be relatively low, and certainly lower in this study than just household transmission. So I think that's one message. The other message, too, is to be careful. If a lot of that transmission is occurring in the household, make sure everybody in your house is social distancing and washing their hands and wearing a mask when social distancing isn't possible. So using good common sense that's now backed by data and science. The part about public transportation and the risk being lower in public transportation settings in the household is interesting too. I wouldn't have necessarily expected that. I guess I thought perhaps some of the transmission in New York City and Paris and even Boston to an extent, I thought might have been fueled by places that had public transportation early on before we really knew so much about how this virus was transmitted. But at any rate, it's reassuring data, I think, even for judicious use of public transportation in terms of risk, and gives us a sense of what comparative risks are. So anyway, three studies that I think further our understanding of COVID-19. We're learning a lot about these diseases every day, it seems like, and knowledge is rapidly building and being refined and corrected as needed, as science does. ACC.org has a really valuable COVID-19 resource center, so if you want to get the deep dive, that's a good resource, I think, for those that frequent ACC.org, and I tell you, go ahead, take a look. You can bring yourself up to speed on the latest information, COVID-19. Well, that's this week's Eagle's Eye podcast. I'm Dr. Deepak Bhatt, subbing in for the one and only Dr. Kim Eagle as he is off vacationing while I'm holding down the fort. Have a good week, everyone. Take care and stay safe out there.